broadcasting 24 hours a day from Leeds University Union.
The sound
of students in Leeds.
This is Leeds Student Radio.
Quiet, Potter. In association with the Hyde Park Picture House, you're listening to Box Office on Leeds Student Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Box Office on Leeds Student Radio. I'm your host, Oscar Tarbeghi, and thank you for joining us today for film news, reviews, and more. Reese, thank you for joining us in the studio today. It's good to see you. How you doing? He's not quite there yet. And he's good. He's in. How you doing, mate?
Exhausted.
Busy old time. Anyway, guys, thank you for joining us today for film news, reviews, and more. Today, you're going to be hearing reviews of Black Mass, as well as not The Good Dinosaur anymore. It was going to be The Good Dinosaur, but it is now Bridge of Spies. Guys, be sure to tweet in telling us what your favourite Christmas movie is at This Is LSR on Twitter for a chance to win 2 free tickets to the Hyde Park Picture House. How often does that come about, eh? Okay, I'm going to introduce you to my very special feature presenters for today. Reese, what have you got planned for us today?
I reviewed Black Mass last night. And you'll see whether it's a worthy gangster film to see.
I can't wait. Tim, how are you doing today, mate? You'll also be pitching in on the Black Mass review as well as giving us movie news.
Yes, I will. I have some news. I have some stuff on... We had some tragedies, but I also have some stuff on some new films that we have coming out. And I also am going to be reviewing Black Mass with Reese.
Awesome. I'm on tender hooks for that one. Callum, you will be reviewing Bridge of Spies with me.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that. And I've got a very special Christmas quiz to end this semester of Box Office.
Awesome. I am very excited. Okay, guys, let's see what the UK has been watching this week. This is the UK Box Office Top 10.
The UK Box Office Top 10.
Okay, guys, here we go. At number 10 is a film we should have all seen, especially Kyle should have seen, being our resident U and PG movie reviewer. This is Hotel Transylvania 2, which I still have not seen, actually, the Adam Sandler, Kevin James effort. Number 9 is a film we reviewed on the show, Brooklyn. What did you guys think of Brooklyn? Have you seen it? Have any of you guys seen it yet?
No, not yet.
Nope.
Not quite yet. I do recommend Brooklyn, actually. A very, very good film. At number 8, we have Tamasha. At number 7, we have Carol, which we reviewed on the show last week. And Tim, you saw the other day. You saw it last night, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2 nights ago I saw it, and I thought it was delightful.
It is a very delightful film, very romantic film. Number 6 is a film that was also reviewed on the show. It was Lady in the Van, which looks like a very whimsical effort adapted from the Alan Bennett play, which I really want to see. Yes, Reese.
Oh, no, I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay, sorry, I thought that was
just
a hand up.
Just do my mic, sorry.
My bad. Number 5, there's Black Mass, which, Reese, you will be reviewing on the show today with Tim. I won't ask you to divulge too much before that review. Number 4, we have another film we'll be reviewing on the show today. We're really on the ball here at Box Office, aren't we? Is Bridge of Spies, which me and Callum will be reviewing the Tom Hanks Steven Spielberg effort. At number 3, we have Spectre.
Well, it's fallen down the charts.
Yeah, still knocking about though. Yeah. Still going strong. I'm not a big James Bond fan, I got to admit, but Reese, you had some very positive things to say about Spectre, didn't you?
I thoroughly enjoyed it, you know. But I am a bit surprised it's still in the top 3 though. But, you know, it just shows how good it is.
I guess so. At number 2, we have the new Pixar effort, The Good Dinosaur, which is a film I was going to see and review on the show, but I didn't feel like going to a PGU movie on my own was probably the best look, I've got to admit. So, that's how the planning's done here at Box Office. Yep. To coincide with my embarrassment. Number 1, we have The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2, which is no surprise, to be honest.
No.
I'll go admit.
No.
Callum, you reviewed it on the show last week. Had some complimentary, but also some detrimental things to say about
very,
it.
A very, very average film. the best thing I can say for that. It's very average.
Well done, the UK movie-going public. You are satisfactorily mediocre. It's a wonderful film. Okay, Reese, you went and saw Black Mass the other day, and I want you to tell us a bit more about that. What did you think?
I thought it was... it sort of disappointed me a bit. So the story goes that it's about Jimmy Whitey Bulger, and he's playing this up-and-coming sort of Irish mob boss. He's in charge of the Winter Hill Gang. And what he does is that he forms an alliance, let's call it, with an up-and-coming FBI agent called John Connolly. And initially, this sort of alliance is to benefit John, because he was taking down the Italian mafia. And it sort of benefits Jimmy because it sort of gives him sort of immunity and sort of protection from the FBI. You know, so he's an informant for like more than 10 years, let's say. Yeah. And in all this time, you know, any investigations that come up against him or any, you know, informants, you know, mysteriously disappear or the investigations sort of, you know, are gone to the wind. Start with the directing. So who directs this again? Scott Cooper, I think that's his name. So someone lines that. Yeah. And it's pretty average directing, but I think what he does is most fit. I like the way he... So if someone's getting murdered, let's say, or someone's talking, it sort of focuses on a different person.
It does.
And their reaction. I'm guessing you saw that too, didn't you?
I did see that. I have the same feeling you have about the film. I was telling Oscar this the other night, and you probably heard me say stuff like this. I have trouble with the pacing of the film. It's very long.
Definitely.
And it tries to split up these two lives. It tries to split up Whitey Bulger with Conley, who is the FBI agent. And one thing I do like about the direction, before I get negative, is that it's dark. It's very dark. When you're watching the film, it's a dark film. Like, the lighting is very dark. You can feel that the entire time. It almost feels oppressive at some points. But the issue with the film, of course, is that it's very long, and it splits. And I think Whitey Bulger is difficult because he was a gangster that, you know, that was on the run for a long time. And he's just going to jail now, and he's in his 80s. He's going to die in jail. So he's been able to kind of, you know, get around the feds, I guess, to a degree. And I guess some of that comes into with his relationship with Conley. But I think it misses the mark a bit. What I will say about the film that makes it worth watching is it's the return of Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
He is really, really good in the film. He raises his efforts in it. He's incredible.
One thing I will ask about Johnny Depp, is he playing a human being in this film? Because too often he plays caricatures that aren't often human beings.
No.
And I feel like he's in his best roles, such as in Finding Neverland, he's actually playing real humans. Mm. Even in Edward Scissorhands, he's still got a really humanity. Makes no sense. Real humanity about him. Describe his performance in Black Mass.
Wait, do you want to go first? You can go first.
What I'll say about it is, I think my biggest problem with the film is I think you don't actually get to figure out who he is as a person. You get to see him with his mother, but you still don't get the humanity there. He's just a cold-blooded sociopath. And I think that's why it works for Depp in that. What would you say about it?
Like, I thoroughly agree. I mean, I was expecting to see different sides of this bulge. You know, exactly. When his son died, sort of a bit of anger. When his mum died, sort of, you know, he's a bit cold and detached. But to be honest, like, even from the get-go, you're sort of expecting what he's going to do. You know he's a liar. Like, every single time, he's like, oh, yeah, come to the beat. No, it's going to happen. And then, boom, he's shot in the head. And even from the get-go, Adam Scott's character goes, he undertook, like, 50 LSD experiments to get time off and money from his time in Alcatraz. So you know he's psychotic, he's manipulative. So it's sort of like, in terms of his character, you sort of like, you know what he's going to do. But I got to admit, it was a very good portrayal, though, of the character.
The last thing I'll say about the film, I agree with you completely. Yeah, yeah. The last thing I'll say about the film is it is, for a gangster movie, it's the anti-Scorsese film.
Yeah.
It goes out of its way to not be like that.
How so?
The way it's shot. You can just tell the way, it's none of the slow shots that you always get with Scorsese. It's a certain element. You don't even get it's not even humorous. You know what I mean? Whereas Scorsese films, you think of, there is a level of humor in the gangster films that you enjoy. Not even in the gangster films, when you think of Wolf of Wall Street, it's still humorous. There's nothing funny about this film.
But like, I think ultimately the story lets it down. Like, they got such a great cast, but you don't know any of their names. Like, there was one of the, do you know his colleague, who's also named John? I didn't know his name until the very end of the film. You know, got Adam Scott's character and, like, that prosecutor. And it's just so many characters just thrown at you that you're sort of a bit lost in the story. Like, and also, like, the accents. Like, Benedict Cumberbatch's character, got me, he was the worst. He tried to pull off, like, a really lyrical Irish accent. Yes. Then he just started mumbling and you're like, okay, what are you on about? And I feel sorry for Benedict Cumberbatch because he didn't get enough screen time and just felt like his character was just... No,
is that his brother? Benedict plays his brother, right?
Yeah, Billy, his younger brother.
There's something tremendously missing in that story there.
Yeah.
It's just an overambitious film. They try to do too much in 2 hours, which that's a lot of time, but it splits the two stories of the FBI agent plus the gangster plus the brother. They're all from the same neighborhood, and it's just a lot missing there. I think a better portrayal of Boston in general is probably The Town with Ben Affleck
a few years ago,
which is better
film,
is better done than this.
Yeah, yeah. And also The Departed as well, which is my favorite film of all time. I love that film.
Before the film came out, people were predicting that Johnny Depp was going to... He obviously did a comeback performance, but they suggested that he was going to possibly win an Oscar for this. Do you think he's got a chance for that now?
I don't know. I think with The Revenant coming out, I'd got my money on Leo, but there's... I guess, I don't know. Like, it's really weird because he did portray... Like, he did what he was given, basically, but there was just very little leeway in terms of... the emotions he could portray. It was just ultimately a guy who just murdered people and seemed to enjoy it.
But is that more to do with the writing, maybe? Because I've seen people win Oscars for one-dimensional characters before in the past due to just how well they portray that one dimension.
What I was going to say, I agree with Oscar. What I was going to say was he's the only appealing part about the movie, to be honest, is Johnny Depp. It's worth seeing because of him. He's that good in it. The writing is a bit poor. The story, as I said before, is a bit overambitious. So I do think he probably will be nominated because he's that good in that film.
No. So I don't reckon he'd win, though.
I don't think he wins. No.
So a lesser film, but with a stellar star performance. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. Hello, and welcome to the box office on Lead Student Radio with your host, Oscar. Yay!
Okay, guys, it's movie news time. Tim.
All right, we'll start with some condolences to the family of actor and director Robert Loggia, who died of complications of Alzheimer's on Friday, December 4th. Many of you know him as Frank Lopez in Scarface.
Indeedy.
And Feach LaMonta in The Sopranos, the one that they set up to go back to prison. I really like him in that, to be honest. And that's something that stands out. But more importantly, he was nominated for an Academy Award for his supportive role in 1985's Jagged Edge. In other news, so condolences to his family and to anyone affected by that. Ikflix, a Dubai-based video-on-demand company, has collaborated with a Moroccan filmmaker company to produce the first Arabic production about the Islamic State entitled Come Back. It'll be shot in English, French, and Arabic and will be released in early summer 2016.
I can't help but think that that's a dangerous move. It's going to be a very controversial film when it comes out.
I completely agree. And I think it's like the setting is like Belgium and Turkey and a number of other places. So it's going to be a film to look out for that's going to cause a lot of problems.
Yeah.
In other news, following on the success of Straight Outta Compton, the Tupac Shakur biopic seems to be moving forward with the music video director Benny Boom. If you've seen any of Benny Boom's videos, Shake It Like a Salt Shaker is one. That's one that he may have directed. So I don't know if this is the thing for him to take on, but he's excited. On his Instagram, he said, "I am pleased with the opportunity of a lifetime telling the story of this revolutionary artist, visionary, genius, soldier. I will make him proud and uphold the legacy." So look forward to that. In other news, the sequel to Trainspotting has just been picked up by TriStar Pictures. The sequel of the cult classic currently includes the original cast, reuniting them with director Danny Boyle and screenwriter John Hodge. There's a lot of good things about the writing on that.
Yeah, I can't wait for this. The first film was so good, and they've got the same writer, Irvine Welsh, did a sequel to it, the original book. So at least the script's going to be good quality.
Someone said it was the best film, best script they've seen in a long time.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I haven't seen the first one yet.
You have to see it. You have to see it. It's one of the most filthy films I've ever seen.
Irvine Welsh's books do translate really well onto film. Have any of you guys seen Filth?
Fantastic
starring?
I saw that. I didn't know it was the same writer.
Yep,
I had no idea.
Irvine Welsh translates really well onto film. Anything else, Tim?
I have two more things really quickly. Ryan Coogler, who wrote Fruitvale and Creed, and he directed both of them. He's now rumored to be a part of this Black Panther film that's been, like, everyone's been rumored to it, every director. Hit Talks is in the process with that. And lastly, Ryan Priestley is trying to put together a Phil Hartman film. And Phil Hartman, the SNL alumni, and he's also famous for The Simpsons. You might remember him from that. He was tragically murdered by his wife in 1998.
Oh, was he Troy McClure?
Yep, that's what I said you may remember him from, yep. And that's all I have for today.
Thank you, Tim. That was some really stellar news. Guys, you are listening to Box Office on Leeds Student Radio. Please be sure to tweet in telling us what your favourite Christmas film is at This Is LSR for a chance to win 2 free tickets to the Hyde Park Picture House. If you don't tweet in and you go and pay for a film at the Hyde Park Picture House, you only have yourself to blame, guys. Okay, me and Callum are going to do a nice little review of Bridge of Spies now. I'll give you a brief synopsis. During the Cold War, the Soviet Union captures US pilot Francis Gary Powers after shooting down his U-2 spy plane. Sentenced to 10 years in prison, Powers' only hope is New York lawyer James Donovan, played by Tom Hanks, recruited by a CIA operative to negotiate his release. Donovan boards a plane to Berlin, hoping to win the young man's freedom through a prisoner exchange. If all goes well, the Russians would get Rudolf Abel, the convicted spy who Donovan defended in court, back. Now, this is directed by Steven Spielberg, and you know him. You know Spielberg. He's that guy who revolutionized film with animatronics and CGI in Jurassic Park. He's that guy that creates amazing tension in Jaws, but can also create genuine sentimentality in E.T. and is arguably the best filmmaker of the past 40 years. You guys know that guy.
No, I've heard him before this. But
once or twice.
I'm excited to see what he does next.
He's an up-and-comer, to say the least. But for all jokes aside, his craftsmanship here in Bridge of Spies is just there. It is so there. The pacing is fantastic. It's a true political thriller centered around outstanding performances from Hanks and Rylance. The opening scene in particular is just a masterclass in tension established, and it establishes the premise of the film brilliantly. And I love tension when it's quiet. You know what I mean? I love that sort of tension. You don't need loads of music. You don't need gunfire. You don't need stuff like that. You just need one man chasing another man. And it's really, really simple. Whilst this is the case that Spielberg is at the height of his powers, I believe his penchant for familial sentimentality and humour can sometimes derail the film. Callum, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely the main criticism I had for the film, is Spielberg, all of his films have the same, you know, the same great points. He is a fantastic director, fantastic tension, as Oscar said, but he has the same problems running through all of his films, which is he really, other than Schindler's List maybe, he wants everything to end on a happy twee ending. And so perhaps in a film where everything's a bit murky because it's the Cold War, he chose to end it in a happier way, which didn't maybe fit as well with the tone of the rest of the film.
We'll get to the ending later. I don't think it was a particularly that much of a happy ending. I thought there was a bit of an inner morality, humanitarian crisis at the end of the film, where he realised, you know what, no spoilers, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but whilst I was successful, there is still some things that are still going on that I really don't agree with. Reese.
Wasn't it based on a true story?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Based. That's a key word, yeah.
Tim.
I wanted to ask you about Tom Hanks' performance. Is it very much the same thing you were saying about Spielberg? Is it the same? Would you say the same thing about Tom Hanks in this film?
Tom Hanks, I believe, plays, he is Gregory Peck in To Kill a Mockingbird. I compare him to that. He is just he has an unquestionable, unyielding morality in this film, and he portrays it wholeheartedly with a lot of sincerity, and he is fantastic in it.
Yeah, that is a fantastic parallel. You know, the characters are so similar, despite the different contexts. He definitely plays a very similar character. I'm a complete history nerd when it comes to the Cold War, and so the historical accuracy there was way more accurate than I thought it was going to be.
Really?
Despite the fact it's all very dramatic and all the basic facts which support the film, the real world events which are happening, they are all completely accurate. All the characters are real characters, maybe except for some small minor ones.
That is incredibly impressive. Mm.
Like we were saying earlier about the familial, how sometimes Spielberg gets a bit too into his familial sentimentality. In one scene in particular, but where Abel compares Donovan to a friend of his father's, I believe that's one of the most stellar scenes in the film, and I do believe that's where the Spielberg sentimentality is really poignant and really affected. But it does derail the film sometimes. There's one scene in particular right at the beginning involving Spielberg's daughter and a date she got stood up on, which just seemed rather irrelevant, and stuff like that, and stuff like the humour just doesn't seem to really go anywhere sometimes. Right.
Steven Spielberg said himself that one of his favourite things put in film is the theme of family, because he came from two divorced parents, and he brings those themes into the film. And it kind of felt a bit juxtaposed in Bridge of Spies. As much as I enjoyed the subplot being there, it just felt a little bit out of place, the over-focus on his family.
I do think that as well. But there's one what was I going to say? You said how Spielberg, in all of his films, is quite sentimental, and he wraps things up in a happy ending. In one film in particular, Munich, I don't think it's like that. I was expecting maybe Bridge of Spies to be more like Munich, in that maybe it's a bit more devoid of sentiment, maybe it's a bit more hard-hitting, but I still really enjoy Bridge of Spies for what it is, and especially for the characterization of Donovan, James Donovan, played by Tom Hanks. There's a particular scene on the bridge in the penultimate section of the film where Hanks is standing on the bridge in the snow, and we spot him through the iron bars of the bridge, just staring off into the distance at Abel as he is recovered by the revolution, the Soviet government. And you really get this impression of him as the standing man, what Abel refers to him as the standing man, someone who stand up for what he truly believes in. The main strand of the film for me is morality versus mandate and agenda. How do you feel that rang out for you, Callum?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's definitely those themes told through Tom Hanks's character as he tries to make the decision about what it is right for him to do and how far he will go.
Wow. I feel like a lot of the characters in the film particularly are, well, actually not even struggling with it. Tom Hanks seems to be the only one that's struggling with it. Everyone else seems to be just adhering to the mandate in a rather inhuman way, which is something you need to do when you're in the military or the CIA intelligence, or whether you're under threat from possible annihilation from the Soviet Union. So he is the one who truly goes for what he believes is right rather than dogma.
You were saying he's the only one struggling with it. Is that how they make the connection to the family? How's the family come into the story?
The family comes into the story in a very minor way at the beginning of the film, and it doesn't really need to at points.
I wouldn't say it was incredibly minor. You know, there is a particular moment of tension where he and his family is threatened, which I think is important, but the scenes with the family, other than that, feel very much tacked on just to kind of pull some emotion later on. If he was in danger, it would feel like the family was just there to make the threat seem even more powerful.
It's there for the thrill, and that's maybe less from a thematic point of view, rather from a completely cinematic point of view. And to move on to the cinematic, there is the scene in which Powers falls from his aeroplane. His aeroplane goes down. I thought that was really powerful. I thought there's a breathtaking use of CGI. How did you feel about it, Callum? I really, I was on the edge of my seat for that scene.
I mean, I guess considering I knew the outcome of what the scene was, maybe the tension was less, but I wasn't particularly overly wowed by the cinematography. I'm not saying it was bad, it was definitely good, but wouldn't put it quite as strongly as you did.
I really thought cinematography was really fantastic in this film, especially when they enter East Germany and it's just dark and eerie. Yes, Reese.
You know, I read about the Russian spy, Abel, you know, mm-hmm. Read about how brilliant his performance was. Is that true? You know, could he say that he paired well with Tom Hanks in terms of his performance?
Rylance was definitely Tom Hanks's equal in this film, and was really humorous as well. I do think he was a true supporting player. I thought he really added a lot of weight to the film, especially in terms of dogma. He seems very accepting of his situation, which his role has gotten him into. He seems like, yep, this is what I signed up for. This is what's going to happen to me.
Despite my criticisms of the plane scene, I think if we're going to pull out two major strengths in Bridge of Spies, it was Mark Rylance's supporting performance and the cinematography. Because
really?
The cinematography has this real painterly quality to it. The light, if you're inside and the window would be just this bright white light coming out. It's like nothing I've seen before in a film. It felt very fitting for a Spielberg film. I loved it.
In terms of Spielberg's canon, where do you put it? Because I do believe there's a lot of Spielberg films that get overlooked, such as Catch Me If You Can often get overlooked.
Absolutely.
And whilst I don't quite put Bridge of Spies up there with Catch Me If You Can, I do think it's a Spielberg film that will be overlooked in the coming years. How do you feel about it? Do you feel like maybe it deserves to be overlooked?
I wouldn't say it deserves to be overlooked, but it's not appealing to a mainstream audience like many of the others were. And it's not quite got the shocking value that Schindler's List did, which just drew in audiences. So it's a good film, but it's not remarkable. That's not a major criticism. It is a fantastic film, but it's just not something different from the rest of the crowd.
It is a strong political thriller, in my opinion, though, and I think that's what we will end our review on. Anish has tweeted in to LSR stating that his favourite film, that would be strong. His favourite Christmas film has got to be Elf, hashtag Santa, hashtag I know him, hashtag box office. Philippa has tweeted in saying, I'm going to go for Die Hard. Now, we had this debate earlier. Is a Christmas film, does it need to be revolving around Christmas, or does it just need to be set at Christmas?
Just set at Christmas.
Yeah. A very tenuous Christmas film there from Philippa. But thank you for tweeting in, guys. Okay, guys, now I was able to catch up with Andy Taylor the other day, who is the head of film and games coverage at BBC Radio 1 and Radio 1 Extra. Had a lovely little chat with him, so I'm just going to play that for you. Hello, everyone. You are listening to Box Office on Leeds Tune Radio. I am your host, Oscar Tarbeghi, and today I'm joined by Andy Taylor, BBC Radio 1 and 1 Extra head of movies and gaming coverage. How are you doing today, Andy?
I'm good. Nice to be here.
It's good. I like the media and comms building, actually. It's quite aesthetically pleasing building.
I've been here 2 minutes, so I couldn't tell you much about it. It looks like a big, nice old building, like a proper old uni building, as it should be.
Big, nice old maze. So, Andy, can you tell us more about your role within Radio 1 and 1 Extra?
Yeah, sure. So, basically, anything that you hear on Radio 1 or 1 Extra that has anything to do with movies or anything to do with gaming, then that's my responsibility. Movies and gaming are two massively popular entertainment forms for our young audience, and we've over the last few years built a really good reputation in the terms of access we get to movie guests, movie stars, the type of projects, the type of films we can collaborate on and things we can do with film. Gaming, I think we're just starting out, and that's a role I've taken on recently, and I'm hoping to kind of use some of the success stories we've had with film to take that over to the world of gaming.
As audience habits change, how do you feel yourself and BBC Radio 1 and 1 Extra have adapted in order to get content to a wider audience?
Well, that's a big question. That's a question that our bosses have been asking themselves for years. And, you know, the answer isn't simple. Mm-hmm. But the key thing with any media provider is they've got to know what their audience are doing, what their audience want, and then they've got to try and meet those needs. And you have to understand your audience. And when you're trying to appeal to a young audience, that's the audience who change their habits the quickest. Technology impacts on them with the most speed and the most kind of strength. So you've got to be adapting quicker than anyone else. So the kind of things Radio 1 and 1 Extra have done, I mean, you know, radio used to be purely an audio medium, and now it's a visual medium as well. So we've got our YouTube channel, which has got nearly 3 million subscribers, which is the biggest for the UK in terms of radio station. And we've got our own iPlayer channel, which again is quite unique. There's no other radio station, certainly within the BBC, that has its own kind of visual channel like that. And that's getting over 3 million hits a month. So, yeah, I mean, we are in that sphere where we want to make great visual content as much as we want to make great audio content, because our audience, let's face it, are not probably growing up with radios in their bedrooms anymore. They've definitely got a phone. They've definitely got a laptop. They might have a telly. They might not. So, you know, just by looking at the tech that young people have, that shows you where you need to be. And it's not just about a speaker. It's about a screen these days as well.
You worked with Zane Lowe on Radio 1, Radio 1 Rescores Drive. Can you tell us how that came about, actually?
It was a complete intersection of lots of stars aligning, and it was a project that we'd wanted to do for ages. A guy called Jim Bursey, who actually went with Zane across to Apple, and me and Jim have worked together for a few years, and we always had this idea. He's obviously embedded in the world of music with Zane, and I've been embedded in the world of film for a few years, and we thought, wouldn't it be great if we can join those two worlds together and somehow do something that is equally as much about the film as it is about the music. And in terms of us as a BBC channel wanting to do something with a film, it meant that it had to be a film that we could show on the BBC. So my starting point was with BBC Films and essentially persuading them to buy the film that we wanted, which was Drive. And then we were lucky that we were working with a film company like Icon, who are a little bit, you know, they're not a major studio. Slightly smaller, well, a lot smaller. And so we could have those personal relationships where I could actually work with the head of theatrical at Icon, sold him the idea, then had to sell the director, Nicholas Winding Refn, the idea. the key moment was when Nicholas and Zane met and they trusted each other. And from that moment, you know, Nicholas said, you can do what you want with it. I think it's a great idea. It's a creative idea. And then Zane, I guess, felt he had the permission to go and approach the artists. And from then on, you know, there was a lot of technical hurdles to overcome. But I think once that meeting had taken place and the two main kind of protagonists, Zane and Nick, knew that they could trust each other, then we were on the road to success.
Part of your job, if I'm not mistaken, is arranging interviews with A-list celebrities. Your Chris Starks interview with Mila Kunis went viral, and that is an interview you set up. Could you get Box Office an interview with Mila Kunis by any chance?
Probably not. Not straight away, but...
Oh, it's promising, man.
It's a challenge I'd like to take on. I mean, the basic principles with getting interviews with stars are... If you can prove to that star's publicist and perhaps the film or the project that they're working on that your audience needs, wants to hear about it, and that it would be beneficial for them to hear about it, then there's no rules as to who interviews who. So, you know, it's always worth approaching people and bidding to them professionally and making a case why you should have the interview, because sometimes it comes off.
So do you think that ties in with the visual habits of a younger audience, having a star like Mila Kunis with Chris Stark? Or do you think that is also an interview that's viable on radio as well? Which would you say gained the biggest viewership?
Well, the one that went viral was the one on YouTube. But, you know, Scott's show has a weekly listenership of around 4 or 5 million. So, you know, there's a lot of... And that's happening every day, every week. And so it's hard to compare a one-off visual moment against an ongoing kind of habitual listening to a show. But, you know, the great thing is these days we can have both. So there's a lot of people that have come to Radio 1 purely through seeing that video. You know, I have people that I meet and I say, I work for Radio 1. You know, especially in America, they go, hey, that Chris Stark guy. And they all think he's like a young Hugh Grant, which is hilarious because he's nothing like Hugh Grant. But that's the access point for them. Whereas, you know, I'll meet a lot of people, young people in the UK who know Scott and Chris through the radio stuff. So it's good to have both.
At the moment, you are directing and producing an iPlayer movie about Star Wars, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be very excited about. What sort of themes, what are you going to explore about the new Star Wars, or the old Star Wars, in fact?
Well, it's the program's going to be called The Secret of Star Wars, and what we're trying to do is work out exactly that. Why is this brand, this franchise, so massively successful and across the generation? So there's plenty of people. How old are you?
I'm 20 years old.
Right, and which Star Wars films have you seen?
All of them.
Okay, all right. I suppose you present the film show, so maybe you're not a kind of average, but a lot of people your age would maybe only have seen one or two of the episodes 4, 5, and 6, and then maybe gone back to... Sorry, hang on, no, let's get these episodes right. Because episode 4 is New Hope, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yeah, so hang on. So if they won't have seen 4, 5, and 6, they will have seen maybe...
1, 2, and 3.
1 and 2. But not 3. Yeah, 2 and 3, maybe not 1. These Star Wars numbers. This is partly why we're getting into it. But still, even though those films were not seen as being the best, they got a slating, to be honest. Young people still know that this is a massive, massive franchise, and it has an appeal. You know, we've spoken to young people who only really got to know about Star Wars through the toys or through, like, the Clone Wars cartoons or something like that. So there is something about this brand that just... goes beyond what film can normally do, and that's what we're trying to work out what the secret is.
So it's the exploration of the phenomena, would you say?
Yeah, it's the exploration of the phenomena, but also I guess kind of explaining to people who maybe just think, well, look, I know it's huge, but I don't know where it's come from. Mm-hmm. There's some really interesting roots of how George Lucas came up with the original story. You know, it all goes back into kind of ancient oral traditions of storytelling and mythology. And just the story of that original film, A New Hope, is absolutely fascinating. How, you know, Lucas didn't think it was going to be a hit. And, you know, Alec Guinness took 2.5% of the money made for the whole film, which has made him, you know, earned him hundreds of millions of pounds. So people didn't realise it was going to become this massive thing. But it still is this massive thing, and we're trying to find out why.
What advice would you give to young people wanting to enter a career in production and presenting, particularly in terms of film-related content?
Well, my advice is always the same. It's work get working, do what you want to do. So if you're a presenter, start presenting. If you want to be a producer, start producing, because you can these days. 10, 20 years ago, you had to get into a radio station in order to even access the equipment to have a decent quality mic and decent quality recording equipment, editing software. Now you can just do it on your laptop. So there is no excuse to not be doing it. You meet a lot of people who go, yeah, I want to be this or I want to be that. And my first question is always, well, are you doing it? And if the answer is no, then that's the first thing to sort out. So do it to the highest level you possibly can. If you're at a university, then that could well be the university radio station. But then look beyond that. What's the next step? Because you will meet people at your current step who have either worked at a higher level or will go on to work at a higher level. And that's when you first get involved in networking, which is a dirty word to a lot of people. But all it means is working with like-minded people and helping each other on a fair basis to get opportunities. So work at the highest level you can. And then target the next one and just keep going, keep going, keep going.
So just to clarify, we may be able to get an interview with Mila Kunis.
I look forward to receiving your pitch as to why you should have an interview with Mila Kunis.
I'll get started on that boilerplate soon as. Thank you for joining us today, Andy. You're listening to Leeds Student Radio.
Stupid fat hobbitses! It's listening to Box Office on Leeds Student Radio.
Okay, guys, before we get on with our quiz, I want to thank Martha Scott for tweeting in to Box Office on Leeds Student Radio saying it has to be It's a Wonderful Life, such a great film, in response to the question, what is your favourite Christmas film? Okay, guys, be sure to tweet in to us at This Is LSR, telling us what your favourite Christmas film is for a chance to win 2 free tickets for the Hyde Park Picture House. And if you want, you can play along at home with the quiz Callum is about to assume right now.
Yeah, we got a very, very special Christmas edition of the Box Office quiz this week. So you guys ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, which of these Christmas movies made the most money at the box office? Is it A, The Polar Express, B, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, C, Elf, or D, The Santa Claus?
Which country?
Oscar.
I think it's a worldwide profit, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to go with Polar Express.
You're incorrect. Reese.
Can I go with Elf?
You're also incorrect. Tim, it's between two.
I was going to go with Elf. What's the other two choices?
How the Grinch Stole Christmas or The Santa Claus?
The Santa Claus with Tim Allen.
Yep.
The Santa Claus.
You're all wrong. It is How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
What is that? Jim Carrey?
That is Jim Carrey. Carrey. Yeah.
That was going to be my second guess.
Okay.
Classic.
Hopefully better on the next question. This is for Kyle, this question. Which of these Christmas movies are not PG rated? Is it A, Elf, B, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, C, Home Alone, or D, The Santa Claus? Oh, that was fast. Okay. I think Oscar was first.
Is it The Santa Claus?
It is The Santa Claus.
I thought you were going to say Black Christmas. That's definitely
not PG.
That is one of the worst films I've ever seen. Isn't it Black Xmas as well?
Something like that.
I hated it so much.
Right, question three. Which of these movies are not set at Christmas? A, In Bruges. B, When Harry Met Sally. C, The Apartment. Or D, The Thing. Again, that was very fast. I think Reese was first.
So you went In Bruges.
That's wrong.
Oh. Wait, it's not set at Christmas.
It's not set at Christmas, right? Because...
Oh yeah, did that Christmas party.
Bruges is set at Christmas. Oh
yeah. When Oscar,
go is it The Thing?
It is The Thing.
Ah,
yeah. Oscar is storming the quiz so far.
He really is. Really is.
I just love Christmas, guys. Yeah. That's what it is.
Okay. Might have to be quick on this one. Which classic Christmas film was directed by Frank Capra? Is it A, It's a Wonderful Life, B, White Christmas, C, Miracle on 34th Street, or D, Meet Me in St. Louis? Or Oscar?
Miracle on 34th Street?
That's incorrect. Tim?
Wait, give me the choices again.
It's a Wonderful Life, White Christmas, Miracle on 34th Street, or Meet Me in St. Louis?
White Christmas.
That's also incorrect. Reese?
I've got a 50-50 chance here. Can I go with the last one?
You want to go with Meet Me in St. Louis?
No, can I go with the first one?
You already went with it. It's wrong. The correct answer was It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, God.
Which of these food groups?
I haven't gotten any points.
Which of these food items are not one of the main four food groups in Elf? Is it A, candy, B, candy canes, C, candy floss, or D, candy corns?
Candy canes?
No, that's incorrect.
Oh,
candy
no.
corns.
It is. Yeah. It is candy corns.
Okay, so the score at the moment is me with 2, Reese with none, and Tim with 1.
Oh, doing terrible.
Okay, right. We'll have a couple more questions.
We've got a few more. Home Alone is a classic Christmas film. Its sequels, not so much. But how many sequels have there been? Is it A3, B4, C5, or D6? Tim?
4.
4, that's incorrect. Reese.
Good, 5.
5. 5 is the correct answer.
Yes.
Oh,
man. There's so many of these, so horrible.
This year's biggest Christmas release is going to be Star Wars, but which film is released on the same date?
Oh.
Is it A, Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Trip, B, In the Heart of the Sea, C, Point Break, or D, The Hateful Eight? Oscar?
The Hateful Eight.
That is incorrect.
It's so correct.
I have checked it up.
Fine.
That is incorrect.
We had it on movie news last week.
I checked it out.
That was really mad. Can I go with Point Break?
That is also incorrect. Oh.
Okay, I'm going with Alvin and Chipmunks.
That is correct.
I thought it was Hateful Eight. Like, are you sure you got these?
I'm 100%
sure. Well, you're going to look it up during the song break.
I will look it up during the song break.
Okay, we'll have one more here.
This is the tiebreaker. Considered one of the worst films of all time, the 1964 Christmas film directed by Nicola Webster is called what? Santa Claus Conquers the Aliens, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, Santa Claus Conquers the Little Green Men from Outer Space, or Santa Claus Conquers the Monsters? Reese, I think you were first.
Can I go with the Little Green Men one?
That is incorrect.
Santa Claus Come Kiss the Martian.
That is correct.
Tim, you are the winner on your box office debut of the box office quiz.
It always happens. When the first corner you win. Oh.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Callum, actually. Don't thank you, Tim. You beat me, actually. Okay, guys. It's almost Christmas time. We're going to discuss some of our favourite Christmas films. Before that, I'm going to thank Kyle Withington, for one of our regular contributors to the box office, for saying that his favourite Christmas film is Muppet's Christmas Carol, which I think is definitely up there. Guys, what are your favourite Christmas films? Callum?
Does Die Hard count?
No.
Yeah. It does.
I'm going to count it.
Doesn't count. It's at Christmas. It's not a Christmas film.
Yeah, that doesn't count. Well, on the completely other end of the scale, guilty pleasure film, does Love Actually count?
Yes.
Yeah, it does.
That is my guilty pleasure Christmas film, so yeah, I'll put that as my favourite.
Tim?
Man, we have to pick one. I wrote a large list. All right, Scrooge, Trading Places, does that count?
Trading Places, I don't think so. I think it's more of a film set at Christmas rather than the Christmas film. That's how I look at Trading Places.
I'm a huge Home Alone guy.
Mm-hmm. That counts, I guess.
Charlie Brown Christmas, I just can't get around that. Edward Scissorhands as a kid?
Not really a Christmas film, is it?
I wouldn't say that's a Christmas
fully
film.
At Christmas.
And but... Die Hard and Batman Returns, so I don't think I chose any Christmas films.
You couldn't have stuck to the brief, could you, Tim? You had to be difficult. Reese.
Probably definitely Grinch. Who Stole Christmas. But I wish he remained evil till the end, to be honest. I'm not liking the evil Grinch, but I guess you got to be good in those situations.
I guess so. My favourite film, Christmas film, is Elf, because anyone else, it would have been creepy, I reckon. Will Ferrell just pulls it off, though. Guys, what are your least favourite Christmas films?
That would have to be Kurt Cameron's Saving Christmas from last year, an incredibly Christian-based film, which I decided to watch because I heard these horrible reviews about it, and I was like, it can't be that bad. I made it through about 45 minutes.
Tim?
Santa Claus 2, Tim Allen. The sequel ruined it for me because I love Santa Claus 1 so much.
Reese?
Black Xmas. That film still gives me nightmares. It was vile, absolutely vile.
It's terrible in terms of horror and Christmas films. What a statement Black Xmas made. My least favourite Christmas film is Deck the Halls, where basically Matthew Broderick and Danny DeVito try to out-Christmas light each other, and it's really horrible. It's not in the spirit of Christmas whatsoever. Okay, Tim, me and you did some very brief preps in terms of pitches, Christmas movie pitches. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I'll go first. Mine's is not going to be as Christmassy as it should be. It's actually pretty sad. It's a strange mother and daughter. Both, they're strange because the mother was in the military. She didn't want her daughter to join the military. She did. They're brought together at Christmas time when the daughter comes home, but the daughter is struggling with PTSD.
Yay, Christmas.
In the end, it's a Spielberg ending, so I guess they come together.
Well, thanks for that, Tim. Barrel of laughs. You're getting coal in your stocking, you are. My Christmas movie pitch is Michael Cera is an indie darling film director who is now directing a Christmas film that has been rewritten without his knowledge to be an ultra-conservative Christian puff piece. He comes into conflict, but also is romantically fascinated by the Methodist starring actress who is played by Emma Stone, exploring themes such as atheism and materialism at Christmas. Well, that was a little jut in the cart there. Yep, it's exploring themes such as atheism and materialism at Christmas. The film is written and directed by Woody Allen. I would go see that.
I would. I see anything.
I think my Christmas film pitch has to be Never Back Down, the Christmas special set in space in the theme of gravity.
Callum, do you want to just check the Twitter feed?
Yeah.
Do you want to just do that? Stop with your silly suggestions. Okay, we're going to announce the winner of our Twitter competition now. Congratulations to Anish. You have won 2 free tickets to the Hyde Park Picture House. Please come to the LSR office in the Student Union on Monday. Guys, I've had a really good time today. Really good Christmas show to kick off Advent, I guess.
Yep.
Well, thank you for joining us here on Box Office on Leeds Student Radio. Same time, 2 o'clock on Saturday next week. Thank you for listening.